Welcome to Thrive in the Future podcast, positive solutions to help you thrive, designing your intentional life, homesteading, gardening, and rediscovering culture and tradition. Hey, times are tough. You want to be more self-sufficient and grow more food with even enough to share with family and friends or to sell some of that surplus. You've heard about this food forest thing, but it's also overwhelming to get started. I can help. My thriving food forest design can help you realize your dreams of an edible foodscape or a perennial paradise that'll come back every year so you could grow more food and be more self-sufficient. Schedule your free discovery call with me at thrivingfoodforest.com.
Okay, welcome back. This week, I have Travis from Backyard Berry on Substack with me. Welcome, Travis.
Hey, Scott. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Good.
So we were just talking about you made a mad dash to the store to get some pawpaw flavored ginger ale.
Yep. It's something that's, it's been made in Kentucky for over 100 years. It's like a local ginger ale that everybody goes crazy over. People ship it as far as Hawaii. Like, it's just here locally, and they've got a pawpaw flavor this year. They partnered with KSU, and I was really excited.
Wow, that's great. So, yeah, it's not pawpaw season for another month where you're at, right?
No, yeah. It'll be
when they have probably, the festival. Probably
towards the end of this month, towards all the way through to September.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I usually go down and check them at Labor Day, and then they're usually not ready until the 15th here in Kansas. So
right.
I still got about another 6 weeks left.
But are they pretty prevalent around you?
They're mostly wild down by the creeks. I saw one when I was playing disc golf down at the park a couple weeks ago. Just
right.
So that'll be good. And then I've got a couple of grafted pawpaws out front, but they're not bearing yet.
What varieties do you have?
Sunflower. I think one of them is.
That's a good one. Okay.
Yeah. Exactly. So, most of the ones around here are the wild ones that grow down by the creeks, and they're pretty good, but they've got a little bit of a, wild taste to them.
Right.
And stuff. And they've got really big seeds and all that. So
small fruit, big seeds.
They're not bad. I mean, they're
really,
they're not huge like the ones I see from Kentucky on Facebook. So, So yeah, you growing pawpaw there at your nursery?
Yeah. There is an orchard. There's probably two or three orchards around me. I don't know if any of your viewers are familiar with Cliff England, but he's, I guess, about an hour and a half away. And I purchase seed in from him, but I also go to the Ohio Pawpaw Festival every year. Mm-hmm. And there's some great growers up there, and they all have cultivated varieties like you're talking about, like sunflower. And so I will buy in seed from them because I know that A, it came from a good fruit, and B, mm-hmm. a good tree probably pollinated it. So I try and game the system that way by getting two good parents and trying to plant better parents or get better offspring from it.
That's great. Yeah, really, what really stood out to me when I saw your Substack was when you started the series on building a sustainable nursery. So tell a little bit about yourself and your nursery.
So I am Travis. I went to college for exercise science and kinesiology. So I've always been kind of interested in nutrition and how your body reacts to certain things and different nutrients and stuff act in the body and how your hormones and stuff work. And I got out of college, had a kind of a breaking point there where I was like, I graduated, didn't turn out. So I was kind of scrambling for what to do. And then right before COVID, I started gardening in my backyard to like pass the time and not go crazy. And then COVID hit and I had a lot of time, So I started looking into agriculture, started looking into, the brokenness of the conventional agriculture. I'm surrounded by corn and soy everywhere I go. And so I was just kind of like looking into that. I got into organic agriculture. Organic led into regenerative. Regenerative led into trees. And so then I started looking into permaculture a lot and all of the different fruit, nut trees I can grow around here or forage around here. I grew up hunting, so I was familiar with a few of them, but there weren't a lot of, I wasn't like crazy about them or anything. I just knew what they were. And so, once I got into trees, I was like, all right, I'm going whole hog, full tilt on these trees. I think they are the future. I think they're the future. They need to be the future of agriculture. More perennial systems, less tilling of the soil every year, less labor involved every year in the planting and such. And so I got into trees and never looked back. I've just been planting trees around my yard ever since for the last like 4 or 5 years.
Wow, great. What's your favorite trees around your yard so far?
Favorite trees around my yard so far. Well, I really like watching birds. So I got some pin cherries in my yard that are pretty productive. Mm-hmm. And so it draws in all different types of birds. But in terms of like what I'm growing, I really like pawpaws and persimmons.
Yeah.
They're my favorite.
That's great. What kind of persimmons do you have? Do you have the more wild ones or do you have the Asian ones?
More American type, but, there is a tree on the farm that I work at. I work on an organic vegetable farm.
Wow. And
on that farm, there is a tree and it produces persimmons bigger than a golf ball.
Mm-hmm.
And they're delicious. They taste like little spice jelly packets. Yep. And so I try and save seed from them every year. And that's what I grow out for the nursery.
Yeah. What's your way of propagating the seeds from the persimmons?
I just cold stratify for like 3 months, pretty much from the time I get them until it's time to plant them out. I'll put them in like a damp peat moss, put them in the fridge until it's springtime, and then sow them out in the spring.
Yeah. Do you take all the fruit off and all that?
Oh yeah. I just pop one in my mouth and then spit the seeds out in my hand.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
that's good. Yeah, I've got a whole bunch of persimmons growing right now. I haven't got any to take in the pasture. But that's one of my projects for the coming year.
Right.
So I had one last year and I planted it and I can't remember where I put it. So that must mean it didn't make it.
I've had that a lot.
Yeah. So do you have a nursery also? Do you propagate and then sell plants?
So technically I'm not supposed to, but I do on Facebook Marketplace.
Sure.
It looks healthy and there's no like fungus issue. There's no bugs eating it alive. None of that kind of thing. I haven't had any, everybody that has bought plants has been happy. So,
yeah,
I mainly just sell on Facebook Marketplace. But I'm not like selling an insane amount. I'm mainly getting them into the hands of friends and family that want to, that see what I'm doing and understand the importance of it, and yep. Kind of a low barrier of entry for some people in the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You made a post the other day about planting from seed and you were talking about the pawpaws and the persimmons. What other stuff do you like to grow straight from seed?
Straight from seed. I grow American plum, all the different American plums from, you know, Chickasaw plum, American plum, hog plum, all those. I've not had great success with those, but I try and grow those because they're really important for the ecosystems. I grow bur oak, white oak, chestnut oak, black walnut, butternut, pawpaws, persimmons, service berries, mulberries, cornice moss, which is a non-native, but it's a edible dogwood.
Mm-hmm.
Aronia, I've grown from seed. Elderberry, I've grown from seed. Pretty much just all the native edibles that I can find around here, honestly.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I grow a lot of chestnuts. They had all the chestnuts that I got from somewhere else all died in Kansas because we don't have April showers, bring May flowers. We get May and June thunderstorms and then a bunch of drought.
Right.
So my friend planted, some Chinese chestnut trees down at the school thinking that he was going to do chestnuts roasting by the open fire demonstration for the kids. And then the the principal didn't like that idea, but they never cut the trees down. So I just go and pick up the chestnuts and put them in buckets of sand and then transplant them in the spring.
That's a great idea.
Into tree pots and stuff. So I've been messing around with a bunch of different kinds, and then I made friends with the chestnut farm guy and got a bunch of hybrid types, like, you know, Dunstan types. And then I've got one that's called Revival, and the chestnut's almost as big as my palm. That's my new experiment this year.
Yeah. Cliff England, the guy I was talking about earlier, he also has a bunch of chestnuts, and he's here local to me. So that's where I get my chestnuts mm-hmm. from.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. You see a lot of folks converting their corn and soy over to chestnuts out that way?
I wouldn't say a lot, but when you see one, it's the whole farm. So my dad owns property that I help him manage in northeastern Kentucky, closer to Virginia. And on the way there, there is a farm that used to be corn and soy and cattle. And now it's nothing but tree tubes. And I can't imagine it's anything other than chestnuts.
Right. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's great. And then
it's like acres and acres and acres. Lots of chestnuts.
Are they feeding the cows in between the trees and stuff?
Not yet. They're not big enough to produce or anything. They're just now starting to pop out the tube.
Oh, wow. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. They take a long time to get to the top of the tube. So, yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah. One of the things you posted about last week was a homegrown national park that basically with all of our yards and everything, it's just like a national park. Tell a little bit about that.
So Homegrown National Park is an initiative put on by this entomologist in the Northeast. I'm not exactly sure where, but his name's mm-hmm. Dr. Doug Tallamy. He's written a couple books. I've got them around here somewhere. One of them is called Bringing Nature Home, Nature's Best Hope, and Let It Be an Oak. Those are a couple of them. And in one of those books, he talks about how in North America, over 40 million acres is privately owned property. And so his initiative is, what if we took each of us took half of our yards and planted it out into a native species? So whether that be, you know, like oak trees and plum trees, native cherry trees, some milkweed, some goldenrod and asters. What if we took all this unused lawn that's doing nothing for the ecosystem except drawing water and fertilizer that we have to put on year after year after year. And if we planted it in native species, we could, one, grow the largest national park in the United States. It would be like as big as, you know, Yosemite and all these big national parks put together. And two, we would start to see our ecosystem kind of revamp and revitalize. It would be a regenerative way to make these habitat corridors from, so like the monarch, for instance, has to fly from the Northeast all the way down to Mexico. And along the way, they find, I would imagine at this point, they're finding places where it's a struggle to find these milkweed patches. Mm-hmm. And so not only is it a struggle for them to find the milkweed patches, so there's going to be less of them that are populating, but then those few that are populating are still able to be picked off by, you know, birds or any other type of insect predator. So if we made these habitat corridors, it would make the trek easier for these native species.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah.
What other kind of herbs are you growing, and perennials are you growing on your property?
So I grow milkweed, we have some rattlesnake master, we have some butterfly weed, we have some ironweed, we've got some rudbeckia, some Jerusalem artichoke, which is a native edible tuber. Mm-hmm. We have some, I've already said echinacea, but then I've got things like aronia berry, which is a native bloom. I got a few asters. The neighbor next door doesn't live there anymore, so there's plenty of goldenrod popping up over there. We manage her yard now that no one lives there, and so we don't mow the backyard. Plenty of asters or goldenrod back there. Yeah, that's just to name a few. Some Monarda, I think it's Monarda fistulosa or Didymo. The bee balm, the native bee balm.
Oh, bee balm, yeah.
Yeah.
So what's the rattlesnake? You said rattlesnake aster?
Rattlesnake master. It has one of the weirdest blooms I've ever seen, but it's like this little spiky cone up on the top, and they can get up to like, I think they get up to like 6 foot tall. Right. But it's just like a native wildflower.
Wow. I've never heard of that. That's interesting.
It's a very interesting plant to see in the wild.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like echinacea. I'm going crazy on echinacea this fall. And
yeah, me too.
I went around and got all of the echinacea I could find on clearance. And right. Just planted it everywhere.
All the different colors and
oh yeah, yeah. Powwow awesome. Echinacea and you know, all kinds of stuff. So yeah, it's pretty cool. Great. Sorry, I cut you off.
Have you seen any like bees and butterflies and stuff using it yet?
I've seen a lot of bees on it. Yeah. I haven't seen too many butterflies this year. It's a little bit concerning because I have a lot of milkweed. So I haven't seen too many butterflies. I've seen quite a few weird looking moths, but I haven't seen like monarchs or whatever.
Right. Well, I think this year I've seen probably more monarchs than I've seen in the last like 5 years combined.
Really?
Yeah, I work on an organic produce farm, so she doesn't mow in certain areas, and so there's milkweed by the thousand. But wow. Yeah, I've seen probably, I don't know, a couple dozen this year.
Mm-hmm. What kind of stuff they growing over there on that organic produce farm?
Oh, she's a diversified vegetable producer. So we grow tomatoes, cucumbers, eggplant, peppers, onions, green onions, lettuce, kale, cabbage, collards. What else we grow? Blackberries, raspberries, all the herbs you can think of, asparagus. Oh, it's like some 30-odd crops that we grow.
Right. Wow, that's pretty good. So yeah. what are some of the strategies that you all use for you know, for pests and stuff?
It's like
organic wise.
Is it bio, but it's a biological control type of deal. So we'll use things like there's a certain type of fungus that you can spray for caterpillars, like because around here, especially this year, we've been battling hornworms and armyworms, and we've got them by the thousand. And so it's called like Bacillus thuringiensis. We call it BT.
Yeah, BT, yeah.
Yeah, you mix like a tablespoon in a 3 gallon sprayer. You put some fish fertilizer in there, and then you go spray. That's just one example.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I've used BT a couple times on like trying to keep off cabbage moths or something, caterpillars, right?
Yeah,
you know, off the kale. So
yeah, they are a nuisance. That's for sure.
That's for sure. So, and then you've got a YouTube channel, right?
Yeah, same thing as for my Substack, Backyard Berry. Mm-hmm. I just peddle around in the yard, walk around, talk about native plants, talk about nursery practices. Different crop profiles. So like I'll talk about pawpaws here soon. I have had a video come out about pawpaws, and it was like me walking around the festival. And then I worked on a tree farm last year where she had some pawpaws that were producing. And so I just talk about nursery stuff, tree stuff, and growing stuff.
Great. Yeah. I saw you posted recently about the permaculture principles and everything else. What's the one that stands out to you the most?
Slow and steady. I can't remember the exact term off the top of my head, but it's slow solutions, simple slow solutions or something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just slow going the nursery. I'm not trying to get in a hurry because I'm sure I'll make a mistake somewhere along the way. And if I'm 5 years ahead before I realize that that's a mistake, I'm going to be in real trouble. So I make like one or two nursery beds a year, and I try and implement a new way of growing it. So, 'cause I grow in air prune beds. And so I'll just you know, fiddle with the cage that's on top, or I'll come up with a new design for the bottom that I found on the internet somewhere. And so I just simple, slow solutions and try and reiterate and change things up. And yeah, I really like that one. The three ethics for agriculture should just, like, earth care, people care, fair share. That should be universal for all of agriculture. It shouldn't just be a permaculture thing. It should be an all agriculture thing. We grow plenty enough food in this country to feed everybody here for certain, mostly the world. We throw away more food than most people eat.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Especially. Yeah. It's a, I've got a friend that gets buckets of food from the food bank that people don't pick up, or, you know, or goes past whatever. If it doesn't look perfect, people won't pick it up, even at the food bank.
Yeah. So. And even at the organic farm that I work at, like, there, if there's like a blemish on it, it has to go B grade. And if it's worse than B grade, we have to either throw it out or feed it to the goats, which at least we have the goat option.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah, but we've got a lot of surplus and stuff. And like you were saying, people care, right?
Yeah.
We can share. You can have side, you know, side deals with somebody where you can trade some of those things. So, you know, that's pretty helpful. I like to trade some nuts for some honey or whatever else.
Right. Right.
You know, yeah, I just picked some Chojuro Asian pears. They're the kind of round Asian pears that, and it tastes sort of like butterscotch.
That's awesome.
So they're pretty awesome. They got a lot of Japanese beetle attack. And so they were starting to fall, and I grabbed them and put them in the windowsill till they got ripe. And I had some for my dinner a little bit ago. It was good.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Are you familiar with Korean giant? That's one of the ones we grow in our orchard.
Oh yeah, yeah, I've got that too. So I've got those calorie pears that are the out of control Bradford pear rootstock, and it's taken over my pasture. So we went and grafted on a whole bunch of Asian pears on there. We cut them off and then bark grafted or cleft grafted on Asian pears. That's in awesome. The springtime. So I've got Korean giant, and I've got a lot of Chojuro, and I've got some, I think it's called Turnbull, and some of those. And so we've been growing those out, and they're growing like crazy.
That's so awesome. Great.
And so we already have the rootstock because it was a tree and, you know, cut off enough of it. And that's going to be one of our strategies going forward.
Make the problem the solution. I like it.
Yep, definitely. Yeah. My friend who traded me for the pear scions, he said, you know, you could have a fully function orchard here in a couple of years, because those, you won't have to wait for it to come back from scratch. It's already on rootstock. As long as it doesn't bend over or break or anything or get hit by deer, you know, you'll have fruit within a couple of years.
Right. We've tried this before. Awesome. We just did the same thing on one of the ones growing up in our fence row in the backyard. Mm-hmm. But we've tried this before at a buddy's place and grafted on some, I think we grafted a European variety on, but we grafted a pear onto a buddy's Bradford. And the thing that we noticed is that during the first year, it's been pretty important for us to kind of support them, like give them a stake or something, because the first windstorm that blew through, because for some reason you graft a European or an Asian pear on these Bradford pears, and they shoot off like a rocket.
Yep.
And so the one in our backyard we grafted last fall, which is an odd time to graft, but we did. And it was because we just had grafts fail, but we grafted on last fall. It had one bud survive. And then this year it grew 8 foot. So if we would have had 1 liter that went up 8 foot, it would have been a mess. But because for some reason it grew up one, and then those branches sprouted up. And so it had a little bit of play to help it out, but our buddies did not survive. First windstorm blew through after it got about 4 or 5 foot tall, and it blew it over.
Yep. I've lost a couple of them. So I took it and I, And we went all the way around the outside of the trunk with bark grafts. So there's like five coming up, and like you said, they don't have any support. So I took some like zip ties, and I zipped them tied together all the way up. So they're just like, you know, holding together in a column, and then I staked them. So, you know, hopefully those will hold up. So far they've been doing pretty good with the wind. So, you know,
well, that's good. Hopefully if they make it the first year, they'll be good to go.
Oh yeah. I'm excited about it. And then I'll keep trying. So it'll be good. That's and then awesome. I have an apple variety that I've been grafting called Red Cinnamon that has a red flesh, and then it has kind of cinnamon overtones to it. That's real good.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah. And then I've got this Crimson Blush that I've been working on that I got from my friend that tastes like juicy fruit. He let me taste the apple from it, and it was just like, this is crazy good.
That sounds really good.
Yeah. So I'm trying to get that going, and then, you know, and then I'll have eventually, you know, if it takes, then I'll have some science and some other stuff here in a few years. So it's good.
That's
those
awesome.
Are my favorite. Those are my favorite ones. I've got really bad cedar apple rust.
Yeah,
because we got cedars everywhere. So, you know, how 3/4 of the apples that I plant, some of them just don't make it because of the cedar apple rust. And right. This year, the Japanese beetles descended on the apples rather than on the chestnuts this time, which is weird. But, you know,
they seem to really have a favorite every year.
Yeah, last year it was the chestnuts, and they descended over there. And this year they haven't touched the chestnuts, so it's kind of funny. But you know, I've got apples, so it's all good.
That's awesome.
So that's good. So what's your main goal for coming up 2026? What's the main new thing you want to try?
New thing I want to try. Well, right Next now year. I'm actively. Okay. I'm actively working on my social media accounts, so that'll probably go all the way into next year. Just trying, because the goal is to build in the community, but also to be able to sell online. But yeah, so that's for the next year and a half, that's the goal, is to continue working on Substack, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. But in terms of like trees and nurseries, I want to get a really solid local outlet that I can sell at. So around here we have something called a chicken swap, and, it's just chicken like a farmer's market. Yeah. It's like a farmer's market, but most people bring animals and they just swap animals back and forth and plants. And
that's awesome.
It's really just anything agriculture. And so they do that 2 weeks a month, except when there's 5 weeks in a month, and then they do it 3 times. So I really want to get in there and start trying to sell plants. That's the goal for next year. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. My goal is to expand my chestnut variety. So yeah, that'll be good. Great. Right. So how can folks find you?
I am Backyard Barry on Substack, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube.
Awesome. Great. Yeah. I like your YouTube, and I follow your Substack. So excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you, Travis.
Thanks for following along.
If you like this episode, leave us a tip on Venmo or Cash App at Thrive in the Future. You can also go to our stuff page and buy some stuff, or go to grownuttrees.com and buy some trees. And I now have a Substack. It's thriveinthefuturesubstack.com. And that's where I post some of the articles that were on Thriving News, some of the things written by Perpend, as well as I post these episodes over there as well. So go over there, subscribe. That's at thriveinthefuture.substack.com. Thank you for listening to Thrive in the Future podcast. If you like what you hear, please click that like or subscribe button in your favorite podcast app. Follow us on Twitter @ThriveInTheFute, and also go to thriveinthefuture.com.